Welcome to Day Zero Update for November 24th, 2024. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
And I'm Brandon Perkins.
Yeah, two-man crew this week, but we have plenty of stuff to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
A number of games have gotten dates, a couple for delays.
Mm-hmm.
Industry news and such. A couple of things, you know, subscription things and such. And talk about the Game Awards nominees.
Mm.
And how weird this year's list is. Especially just formatting wise, I think they've made some major mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get to that, we'll talk about what we've been playing, and I will start. Been playing a bunch of stuff, but the new one here is Microsoft Flight Sim 2024.
Mm-hmm.
The newest of the Microsoft Flight Sim games. It's essentially an evolved form of the last one. I think just runs on Series X and S.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been playing on my Series X. Not going to try it on PC because I just don't have faith in any of it. They've made the install process, at least on consoles, pretty decent because it's maybe like 20 gigs or so to start. But it's one of those games that will stream in data as you need it. So... Hopefully you've got a decent enough internet connection when you're playing, or else I don't know what happens, but the game's been pretty buggy. I know I didn't really know this when I was playing it, but the launch was apparently pretty bad with server issues, since it's an online-only game.
Mm-hmm.
Not having the servers to handle the load, and especially probably not helping to have people streaming data.
Mm-hmm.
Off of their servers seemed to cause it to kind of be down for most of that first day, which is not great. But I was just playing on console like a day or two later, whatever it was, but seemed to be mostly fine, though. You can definitely tell it's like a PC game because when I started, it's running through like activating packages, I think, is one of the terms it uses on its little bar, loading bar, data, and that kind of stuff. That is like, all right, I'll let it sit here. Seems to do this every time, so I don't know why it doesn't just do what it's doing, but whatever. The menus, I have a bunch of stuff on there, a number of modes. You know, I was running through the tutorial stuff, kind of getting the hang of how to control it with the controller. Which is pretty complicated to a pretty good degree, but not too hard to at least get the gist of the more important stuff. But I feel like a major issue that I have is having gone through the tutorials and not necessarily remembered everything. It does not pop up anything to be like, here's how to do this thing. Here's how to do that thing that you might be forgetting. That kind of stuff, especially stuff that might be useful for where you're at in your flight, for taking off or whatever. And like, I feel like this is a game that could do a good job of easing you from the very beginner stuff to being able to, you know, run through the pre-flight tech stuff by yourself. But it doesn't seem to have any like checklist for it. They have like a tablet that you can pull out at any point that has like it listed on there, but it doesn't tell you like where the specific buttons are at or what you're looking for, you know, maybe what buttons you need to hit on the controller to do the thing. It just lists a bunch of stuff and you're just supposed to like wander around looking up your dashboard, see like, okay, where the hell is this? And I don't think there's a zoom, or at least not one that I've been able to find. They do let you toggle off the yoke visually so that you can see the buttons that are hidden behind it, that kind of stuff. And yeah, there's a lot of weird like controller stuff. It's obviously, that's a big challenge trying to adapt that kind of game that you ideally want like a flight stick set up, a HOTAS or something like that, for this kind of game. But being on a console, you know, you're more likely than not to not have that, and that just kind of leaves this game being kind of tough to pick up and play as much as you might want to. I even ran through all the tutorials basically up to the point where I can, you know, take off and land without too much trouble. Whether I do that 100% well every single time, you know, is up in the air depending on the situations, but it's been like one of those kind of situations. And mm-hmm. yeah, so they have tutorial missions for that kind of stuff. There's career mode, there's free flight, there's like a photography mode because you can get out of the planes or the helicopters and whatnot to go walk around.
Yeah,
all those missions, I think they're all focused on helicopters, but I haven't played much more than the first one,
mm-hmm.
Which was set in Egypt. Like, why don't you go take a picture of the Sphinx? But I tried to land at the first helicopter spot that I saw that ended up being a good bit away, and I couldn't figure out how to take off with it
mm-hmm.
From where I landed. I also landed the helicopter like nose down because I couldn't figure out how to ride it. Any things I was doing, I was trying to fix that. It just made it kind of go forward while scraping the nose on the ground, kind of thing. It was weird, but as you might expect, you can't really move around too quickly, not like an open world game or anything in that sense. So yeah, it's got a neat modes and such. I tried the career mode, which lets you kind of start from the sort of beginner stuff, like the tutorial stuff I was doing was like the things that it was recommending that I do. But since I had already done them, it was let me to start to get my private pilot's license that I was having a little bit of trouble because the specific airport that I picked was a field. I generally picked one that was not too far from where I live right now. It was like over a bit in a field. And I was just like, okay, I didn't thought that'd be humorous, but then the mission itself for taking my test needed me to, you know, turn to get on the, you know, quote unquote runways in this field, that the turn itself was almost impossible. It was like almost like a 150 degree turn to my left, and there were trees in the way from where I started. And so like I maybe got past it once, and that was the one where I was doing it, but it seemed like when I was taking off, it gave me some weird issue where it had me flying the opposite direction of where I was supposed to go. So like the markers for like the general flight path you're expected to take were immediately like behind me in a weird way. And I was just like, maybe I messed this up. So I'm going to start that over again and pick a normalish airport to start from, so that it's built for that versus just being like, oh, there's trees in a way. It's like, why the fuck did you put the airplane near trees?
Because
it doesn't turn that way. A Cessna doesn't turn that quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It was like frustrating in that way. So, but yeah, I did a couple of flights. I did one in a Cessna, flew from the Cleveland Hopkins International Airport down mm-hmm. to Columbia, and that took a good hour, which I thought it was going to be shorter. But then I realized, like, as I was in the air, I was like, "Oh, this is a Cessna, so this is gonna take a while," and it did. But once I was up, it, you know, was not a huge deal kind of keeping it up, in the air and all that, and on track and all that. So that worked out just fine. I landed, though. I always keep forgetting that when they talk about brakes on that stuff, that you have to keep like pumping them versus just holding it down, because it just doesn't work the way that's, you know, like a car would. But yeah, then I wanted to play around a bit, and I took an airliner, Boeing 737 MAX, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Flew that from San Francisco's airport, SFO, I think, whatever the name of it is, and I just went in the wrong direction and just crashed it. which doesn't crash. It just stays whole. I just landed in an airport, or not an airport, a neighborhood. Kind of bounced around a bit in a weird way. And then I got out, and unfortunately I was stuck in the middle of a bunch of geometry. Because, yeah, despite them making improvements on, like, visual stuff and some of their map scanning stuff, there's a lot of parts of the world that are just going to be, like, very poor, sort of, like, boxy models, garbage models kind of thing.
Yeah.
That you'll see. Even in the airport that my tutorial stuff was happening was, I could see some of that directly on the airports. If you go look at the like satellite maps that they have that they use for this, you can see clearly that like shots of roads and highways and such have the cars on the picture itself, on that texture, and then you just see like, you know, whatever virtual cars driving over it on those roads. So kind of leads to an interesting kind of look for some of this stuff. But yeah, it's a pretty solid one of these games. Got a lot to it, so I'll probably keep playing a bit and see what I can do. But yeah, it's got some fun stuff to it, but it still needs some work. But yeah, that's Microsoft Flight Sim 2024. That's on Game Pass and Xbox Series X and S and PC. Let's see, the other games I've been playing, Wilmot Works It Out. I am almost done with this. I'm on the last season. I've been really enjoying that, putting together more puzzles and putting them around the house. So yeah, not really too much else to say, but the story's got some nice stuff to it. But been playing some Blood Omen, as that is out on PlayStation 5 and PS4 for PS Plus Premium, or you can buy it separately for $10, I think. And yeah, it's definitely like a darker take on a Zelda game where you're playing as a dude who gets killed by a bunch of mercenaries or whatever they are, that he is brought back to life by a necromancer who offers to kind of bring him fully back to life to get his revenge. And he takes that, not really understanding what the consequences of that is, what he's trading that for, and ends up getting turned into a vampire, essentially. The first couple hours, you're doing some tutorial stuff mostly.
Yep.
Going through dungeons to pick up new abilities and such. Nothing really too complicated. You know, you're doing a lot of hack and slash stuff. It's very much got some Zelda to it with a little bit more. You know, you're running around, you see humans that are locked up on in chains on the walls and such. And you can just kill them, or you can attack them and suck their blood for health.
Yep.
Which is a cool part of the UI on that on that game. Because you see the blood kind of flowing down from the gargoyle mouth or whatever it is into your health bar.
Yep.
If you have, it's already full, it just kind of flows out. Like, oh well, I killed him for nothing. And the mana has not as good a one. It just kind of has a little icon that just kind of fills up a little bit.
Yeah.
As you use the spells and get more mana. But yeah, I got past the point where you are essentially getting to the meat of the story, kind of kicking off. As you kind of realize what the general framework is going to be, where you have these pillars representing these different, I guess, temples, whatever you're going to be going into. And you're going to go in, kill probably a boss of some kind and get something out of it. And you're going to destroy all these pillars. Doesn't seem too complicated, but the story around it's pretty good. Yeah, that's about as much as I can really say. It's very much an old PS1 game where they hadn't quite figured out how to make some of these mechanics work. Because the mechanics for picking sort of what item or spell you want to be your main thing you're using is just kind of clunky. And kind of feels like it's non-responsive at times.
Yeah.
Which is not great, but it's like, it's not something you should be fiddling with much. But that's been pretty good. Then played some Blood Omen 2, which is also on PS Plus Premium. You can buy it separately for $14.99, I believe. That's the fourth game in the series that was made at around the same time as Soul Reaver 2. So the team that made it is not the same team that worked on that game.
Nope.
It was just a different team. I forget if it was still Crystal Dynamics or some other team. But it feels like they evolved the kind of Zelda formula to one that's a bit more like the 3D Zeldas of that time, the Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask. You're dealing with tank controls for whatever reason. That is a little jarring at first, but once you kind of get going, it's not as big of a deal. It's not as simplistic as like a Resident Evil one, where it's very much makes everything control poorly. As is kind of necessary for the type of game they're trying to make that is punishing and all that. Whereas here it's kind of more reasonable. And kind of loose enough because you got platforming and that kind of stuff that you're doing. So they kind of have to make it feel good there, which is pretty good, but I definitely see why this is a game that got a lot of like sixes and sevens when it came out, because it's like just rough enough around the edges that it's not like making me super excited to keep playing it, but I'll probably put some more time into it. But it takes place a few hundred years later, because I assume whatever's at the end of Blood Omen, your guy gets put into a coma of sorts for a long time and comes back, and you spend a lot of time in tutorial land as you're being guided around, sort of learning about the realities of the new world you're in, which has been taken over by the Seraphins as the humans have been subjugated in their quest to rid the world of vampires. And you're setting out to take down the Seraphins, I guess, but where I got to, I was still in the middle of tutorial stuff. Probably not too far from getting done with it, but you know, a good hour of that at that point is a lot for the way that you kind of get led around by your partner there. So, but yeah, that's a pretty solid game for what it is. And I've been trying to jump back into some stuff that maybe making my game of the year list. So I wanted to get back in, put some more time, and kind of remember, see if they are probably going to make it and put more time into it, or see kind of where I'm at, what I need to do, that kind of stuff. So I played some Prince of Persia of the Lost Crown, which I still like, but those kind of games, Metroid style games, are hard to come back after a while, even if this one's more handy in that front. But I was like wandering around on the map just trying to figure out, like, okay, where's the only objective I had is like find a new power. And it's like, oh great, that's very helpful. So what I was just wandering around the map looking at parts of the map that are, you know, at the still have the fog of war on them or whatever, and looking around trying to deal with whatever, and been playing a couple hours, I couldn't really find it until I just gave up and looked up a walkthrough, see like what was the last thing that I think I remember here. I guess what I remember is this point where you essentially get to a place where you need to be, but you don't have the powers needed to get past this point. So it's just like, oh, you gotta go get a new power. And you have like a branching point of where to find the next thing. And so I think I went both ways, but never finished either one. So that's where I'm at. Going down the one path, kind of just looking at what's there, which took a bit for me to get the hang of how that game plays, because at a certain point you kind of have a lot of combo stuff with the combat that is tough to kind of get back into, especially depending on what sort of enemies you're running in early on. The abilities that I had, remind myself how they worked and all that, what good they are and all that. So yeah, it's still holding up pretty well, but still has some work to do on that. I jump back into Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. That was another one where I'm like, oh God, if I'm going to play through this is going to be all I play, which is why it's probably not going to beat it, but I still want to put some more time into it. I've already put like 11 hours into it, so I definitely haven't put nothing into it, but I'm at like chapter 2, so still fairly early. But I jump back in, like, all right, what am I going to do? And I saw a bunch of side quests I had picked up. I just went around and did those as I got acquainted to the combat and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, not too bad so far, but yeah, still got a ways to go. Mm. But yeah, that's been pretty much what I've been doing. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I have been playing The Last of Us Part 1, which is, of course, the remaster of the 2013 classic The Last of Us. And yeah, I mean, I remember pretty much every single story beat from that game from front to back by Rotonote, and yet it has not gotten old at all. This game is still a masterpiece. And, you know, obviously, if someone was to ask me, like, you know, what version should I play, this one or the old one? Really, you could go with either one. They're both fantastic. What the remake does is, on top of the fact that, you know, it uses cleaner and more updated character models, there's also some, like, graphical upgrades. The overall environments are a little bit more detailed and a lot more elaborate, with a lot more stuff to see. You know, it's like, yeah, it's covered in junk. Now there's more junk that you can definitely make out. You know, the textures aren't quite as muddy as they were in the first one. They also made some UI changes, also some, accessibility changes as well, involving like difficulty and stuff like that. They also, added some new animations to certain things, new death animations, stuff like that. Otherwise, it's basically pretty much a shot-for-shot remake of the original game. And it's as good now as it was back then. It's still a masterpiece and still as, you know, vicious and, you know, sometimes downright gruesome as the original is. But yeah, that game is amazing. And if you have access to it, I was able to play it because I have, you know, my PS Plus subscription. I was able to do it and, you know, able to play it. And it's so good. So if you've got a PS Plus subscription, go ahead and go for it. You know, play it. It's amazing. And other than that, also, like Chris, I am playing the original Blood Omen, Legacy of Kain. And like he said, yeah, you can definitely tell that this is an early PlayStation game in a lot of ways. One of the things you can definitely notice right off the bat is this game is very, very talky. Kain himself rarely shuts up throughout the entire game. He's basically narrating the entire thing to you as you're playing. And the thing is, that's partly, you know, Silicon Knight sort of showing off. It's like, hey, look, we, you know, this is a console game and, you know, we can actually have like actual full human audio on a console game instead of the weird little bits and bytes you could get on, you know, with previous, you know, cartridge tech. But other than that, you know, graphically, you know, definitely graphically, it's a bit more advanced compared to like what, you know, you could get on like a SNES or whatever, but it's still pretty primitive by modern standards. That said, there are a lot of things about this game that are surprisingly, like shockingly ahead of its time. in ways that we kind of take for granted now. For one thing, the game is a little open-ended in sort of the ways that you can, you know, tackle some of the dungeons and stuff you can go through. Chris also said, the UI for this game, because it's an early PlayStation game and it's a straight port of the original, that means that the UI and the controls can be a little archaic compared to what we would have now. It would probably be less archaic if you know, this was, you know, 1996 when the game came out and you had like an actual physical copy that came with the manual. Everything that described how you do it, but because that's not the case, you're sort of having to suss out through trial and error, like what you're doing and how you're doing stuff. You've got your, you know, your energy, that's your health. And my sort of, you know, my policy so far has been basically drain blood wherever you can get it in the entire game, because not only do you like run out of health when you're, you know, getting hit by enemies, but, you know, if you're outside and it's during the day, the sunlight will slowly drain your energy as well. That's also an issue. Also, if it's like raining, that'll also slowly drain your health as well. So basically get your energy where you can get it. But there's some other stuff where it's a little clumsy. One of the, because, you know, you're playing a vampire, what's one of the things vampires can do? They can transform. And one of the early transformations that you get in this game is like a werewolf form that you can take on. And the thing about the werewolf form is that you can use it to make like these huge leaps, like both, you know, vertical and horizontal jumps that you can't in your normal form. So you can use it to like ascend cliffs, or you can use it to like jump across like huge pits or like these huge things filled with spikes. But it's kind of unprecise when you're trying to do it. So it kind of takes a couple tries to be able to successfully like leap across like a field of spikes. But probably like the biggest issue I've had in this game is with the spells that you get. Obviously, the first couple of spells you get in the game, there's like the first one you get that like lets you teleport back to your crypt so that you can rest up, you know, at any time. There's also one that you get early on where you basically fill whatever area you're on with light, because there are dungeons and parts of it that will be in pitch black and you need something to light your way. But the one that's really giving me trouble is the energy bolt, because the energy bolt, you have to like have a certain amount of time to like get it, you know, not charge it up, but be able to take it out, because it's very specific and you can't like diagonal move in this game very often, and it's very hard to aim it. And when you do go into the dungeon that gives you the energy bolt spell, the primary enemies you'll end up going into are these things that essentially have a, what is, for lack of a better word, a homing missile attack. And you know, you can technically kill them with your basic sword, but you know, it's hard to get up close to them because of that attack. And, you know, so basically the game is encouraging you to use the energy bolt, and it takes two energy bolt strikes to kill them successfully, but they can constantly hit you with that homing attack. And so, you know, it's hard to get in position to attack them and still manage to avoid that homing attack. But otherwise, yeah, it's like, it's a strongly still a really strong game and still kind of holds up fairly well. Honestly, I can't wait for the Soul Reaver duology that'll be coming out. Hopefully, I know it's coming out not too long from now, but I want to be able to play those games again, because they were a lot of fun back in the day. But yeah, that's what I've been playing.
All right, so yeah, let's get to some news, and we got some subscription news.
Mm-hmm.
First up, the Game Pass lineup for the rest of this month.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned, Microsoft Flight Simulator 2024 is on there.
Mm-hmm.
as of this week. Also coming out this week, Stalker 2, Heart of Chernobyl.
Yeah.
Which had a rough launch, which I don't think anybody that's knows the previous games expected it to be like perfectly playable out of the gate.
Oh yeah, the original Stalker is notorious for how unbelievably buggy it is.
Yeah, which I've seen people like, oh no, this is going to be the last of the true Stalker experience before they start patching it. They got the first patch coming up here next week. So yeah, that's available on Game Pass Ultimate and PC Game Pass.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Also available now on Game Pass Standard, Little Kitty Big City.
Mm-hmm.
That's available there now, as well as Plate Up. That's a fun little game. It's one of those cooking management games or restaurant management games. Let's see. Coming up here on Tuesday, Nine Souls for Xbox Series X and S, PC, for Game Pass Ultimate and PC Game Pass.
Yep.
That's one of those action platformers.
Yeah.
That is Sekiro styled.
Yep.
In terms of its combat.
Yeah, this is a game I've been wanting to play for a while, and finally going to get a chance to do it.
Yeah, so there's that on Wednesday for console and PC, Aliens Dark Descent. This is the turn-based, tactical game. You command a squad of Colonial Marines trying to take out Xenomorphs. So yeah, that's Wednesday on Game Pass Ultimate, PC Game Pass, and Game Pass Standard. For people to check out, and let's see. I guess they also have a bonus DLC pack for Genshin Impact. That's on Xbox. So if you have Game Pass, you can get some extra of the various currencies and materials in that game.
Yeah.
That's one of those games you want to start and then come back after a while, because you'll get a bunch of shit for all the maintenance that it goes through. That's what a lot of Chinese and Japanese and Korean games do. It's like, oh, sorry, we did maintenance. Here's free shit. And then, so you get a bunch of shit you're not going to use because you're not playing it that often. But yeah. So that's the stuff there. But speaking of subscription stuff, Nintendo Switch Online got a new game for the Game Boy. Donkey Kong Land. The original game, which is a solid one of those. It's them trying to take Donkey Kong Country and make it a Game Boy game, which worked out all right, I believe, if I'm remembering how that game plays. I believe that one kind of strays a bit from what the first game, first Donkey Kong Country has in it.
Yeah.
But I believe the second and third games are more in line with what those their Super Nintendo counterparts had. They do a pretty decent job of just capturing that art style in the Game Boy Advance or the Game Boy, which is an impressive thing to do. So yeah, that's it. So they didn't put all three games. They didn't put a few other games. Just one Game Boy game. So
yep,
enjoy that. But they do have the Super Game Boy stuff, so there's some colors you can add to it for that. So that's at least a bonus there.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's your subscription news. There's technically two more here. PlayStation Portal that came out, that's done pretty well for Sony. The big issue people have had is like, why can't I stream the games from PlayStation Plus Cloud to this thing versus just the games you have locally stored on your PS5. And yeah, they put out new updates that update some other things on it, but also starts the what they're calling the cloud streaming beta for the PS Portal, so that you can try it out. They have a selection of games from the PlayStation Plus game catalog that you can try out, mentioning specifically about 120 games, I guess, from that catalog you can access for now. Streaming up to 1080p, 60fps. Get all the DualSense wireless controller features as a result. And the save cloud storage stuff as well. Works with that stuff too. So yeah, that's cool. People will be able to finally stream some games to their portals and have extra games to play.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you have a PlayStation Plus premium account. Because the cloud streaming stuff is exclusive to that. Much like in the Xbox news, they're finally letting people play games from their own library.
Mm-hmm.
It's a selection of them right now. I think maybe like 50 games or so that you can stream if you have a Game Pass Ultimate subscription, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they've been trying to do a new marketing campaign that's called This is an Xbox. It's like, oh, this, you got a phone? That's an Xbox. You got a laptop? Yep. That's an Xbox. You got a cat? That's not an Xbox. All right, okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's a silly one, but okay.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, they're trying to remind people that this streaming stuff exists, and I think the catch is that you have to have a Game Pass Ultimate subscription to do that.
Mm.
Like outside of Fortnite. But yeah, that's $20 a month essentially to be able to do that. It's like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know if that's going to take off. Mm. Same for on PlayStation, but that one, at least you're going to most likely have the console. They're not trying to angle it as like, oh, you don't have any of this?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and try it. Not only pay for the games, but pay for a subscription to stream it.
Mm.
And see how that goes. But yeah, that's nice to see for the people that already own that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go. Mm. So some decent subscription news for you.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, we got some dates. On Tuesday, Trombone Champ Unflattened will be out on VR. PSVR 2, Steam VR, Quest 2 and 3. This is the VR transition for Trombone Champ to make it play in VR, and the video stuff I've seen of this looks like it's a pretty fun and silly game. Silly mm-hmm. version of that game, as you are sort of controlling the trombone in 3D.
Yeah.
Like you're actually playing it, but also controlling like cursors
mm-hmm.
as such in there. And it's just like a very, very silly way to be playing these this game. Which is already pretty silly with the way that got controlled. The neat looking mm-hmm. thing is that it looks like you can customize your own trombone the way you want
mm-hmm.
With like a spray paint can that you just spray all over it, and some ways to put like dots on it, like somebody makes like a watermelon kind of skin on theirs.
Mm.
That's pretty cool.
Mm.
So yeah, that's pretty neat. That's out on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Happening next week on PS5 and PS4, Lorelei and the Laser Eyes
mm-hmm.
will be out on PS5 and PS4 on December 3rd. This is a very highly acclaimed puzzle game coming from Simogo, a developer that's made a bunch of games.
Yep.
They've done a lot. Sayonara, Wild Hearts was them.
Mm-hmm.
Deer Walk.
Yep.
Bunch of games. This is their newest one. It's very much kind of doing a little bit of like, what if you had it kind of seems like Resident Evil ish or maybe like a Suda 51 kind of style to it, spooky style mm-hmm. to it, but it's mainly a puzzle game and sort of one of those that very much you want to write down notes and that kind of stuff to keep track of your clues and whatnot you're getting. I think it also has a journal in it in the game itself that does some of that, but you might want to have a notebook just to jot down your own notes. So, but yeah, that looks pretty cool. It's the same price as the Steam version. It's like 20, probably going to be $25 for that, which could be pretty solid price for those that want a new puzzle game.
Yeah,
people have been raving about on a PC and Switch.
Mm-hmm.
That's good to see.
Yeah.
Then also happening in December as a result of a delay.
Yeah.
Plague Tale was supposed to be out Friday, I believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thursday. Supposed to be on the 21st.
Yeah.
Now it's been delayed to December 16th.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be a Monday, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, you'll have to wait a little bit more, Brandon.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if they're delaying it for quality reasons, I would prefer they delay it as long as they need to before it they actually release it.
Yeah. But yeah, that seems to be largely the reason. They just want to make sure it's as good as possible for the launch. Mm-hmm. Luckily, let's see. Yeah, that's for Steam on December 16th. Mm. February 2025 for the Switch. I guess the Switch is a little further behind.
Mm.
On that, but yeah, unfortunate, but as long as the game comes out in good shape, that'll be fine.
Mm.
Yeah, let's see. Wuthering Waves, you might have heard of this one, to be as reductive as possible. It's a Genshin Impact clone.
Yep.
Made by a different team, Kuro Games. I believe another Chinese developer. That is finally coming to PS5. I think it's been on PC mobile for a bit.
Mm.
It'll be out January 2nd, so right after the new year, you'll be able to check it out. Alongside the game's 2.0 update. You'll be able to get that. It has a $10 pre-order bundle if you want to get some extra, you know, currency and whatnot with it.
Mm-hmm.
You probably don't need that at all. But
yeah,
you can check it out either way. But yeah, this it's just another open world action RPG kind of game, so with all that anime style to it. So yeah, that's one to check out. It'll be free to play. Mm. And then got anything to add?
Not really.
Yeah, that just seems like another one of those.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's see. Hitman World of Assassination got delayed for PSVR 2 to March 27th, 2025. Mm-hmm. I think I was supposed to be out this year.
Yeah.
Eventually going to be out in December, but they decided to delay it so that they can make sure that it is ready to go, which hopefully it is, because all the other VR versions of Hitman have been underwhelming to a degree.
Yeah.
And this one seems like it should have the highest potential for being a great game.
Yeah, it should.
Yeah, we'll have to see how that goes, but they say they need the extra time to polish it to as good of a shine as they can get for the launch, so that'll be cool to see.
I've been thinking about getting me a VR set, but I don't really know which one. I've thought of doing PSVR since, you know, I already have a PlayStation and everything, but I kind of also want to do Oculus. Honestly, I have no idea.
I'd say maybe for your setup, it might be better to go PSVR 2.
Yeah.
Because, unless you're going to do the whole standalone thing with the Quest. You could also end up getting the PSVR 2 and the adapter if you ever get a better PC that can handle some more of that stuff.
Maybe. Yeah.
PS2 has a lot of most of the good games on there. That also depends on whether you want to give money to Facebook.
Yeah, that's the other thing, isn't it?
This one's one I've been looking forward to because it's got all of the maps that are in the World of Assassination game, which is at least 20 of them, I think. It seems like you'll be able to do all the dumb and silly stuff that you expect in Hitman games, but now you can do it in first person, which will be fun to see. So yeah, looking forward to that. But that'll have to wait for a little bit. But yeah, let's see. That's it for the dates. But for some industry news, Stalker 2, we talked about, is out now, and it's done very well. They've already sold 1 million copies, as well as had a bunch of people join them on Game Pass to play the game, which is great for them. Devs have gone through a lot, because if you don't know, they are a Ukrainian team.
Yeah,
had to deal with the war in Ukraine while announcing the game and finishing it up and all that, and have delayed it a number of times because of that.
Yeah.
Or not because of that, but while dealing with all that shit as well.
Yeah.
And that's been certainly probably a lot of stress and work.
I think they actually had to like completely like relocate in order to finish the game.
Maybe. But yeah, it's good to see that it's done very well for them.
Mm-hmm.
So now they can make sure they can keep working on the game and getting it to a better shape than it launched yet. Because yeah, that seems like the big issue. People likening it to Cyberpunk, the way that launched.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is not great. But it's also not new for the series, so yeah.
Yeah, like you said, it's not very long. We're going to be able to have the full Stalker experience.
No, it's that they're going to lose the Stalker experience.
No, that's what I meant. We're not going to have it for much longer.
Yeah, because they're going to start actually fixing it. Because
yeah,
millions of reasons to keep working on it.
Oh yeah,
I don't remember if they have DLC or anything planned for it, but. I wouldn't be surprised if they did that stuff for the original games.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, speaking of DLC, Steam has added new rules concerning how developers are offering season passes and DLC and such on their storefront, essentially paying for content that's going to be added to the game, but not necessarily that it's available at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So now they are going to require devs to be more transparent around that stuff. As they say, season passes are a purchasable item of DLC with the promise of future content.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for their releases and as additional content unlocked within the base game. To make this commitment, developers must describe each of the major content releases as they... For each of the major content delivery dates and contents to players by entering each date and content below. Mm-hmm. Use the general about this DLC section above to describe the season pass in general, while using the content delivery dates below to specify individual content releases. When you are ready to do so, when you're ready to tell players that you have released content, season pass, use the mark as released option below.
Mm-hmm.
Follow the instructions. Then they link to... documentation for doing that stuff.
Yeah. There.
So that's cool. I don't know how many games this has been an issue with, because I think oftentimes that stuff is kind of mostly done by the time they launch games. While they still be maybe working on stuff, but they also say like, hey, if you don't have dates, you probably shouldn't be putting it out for sale.
Yeah.
Which is reasonable. Mm-hmm. Asking people for money for things that you don't even know when it's coming out is not really a great thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think largely people have not been doing that so much anyway, because I think it's easy to turn positive vibes about your game into negativity if you just start missing deadlines and all that kind of stuff for things that people are paying for.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. Especially if you put down the have to put down the dates that you're expecting to put those out.
Mm-hmm.
You're asking people to pay, you know, an extra $20, $30, $40, whatever it is.
Yeah.
That's unreasonable to expect. Yeah, as I said, don't know that that's been as much of a common thing.
Mm-hmm.
Especially as games are more live service-y, where your regular content is all in-game with battle passes and all that kind of stuff. Usually on a regular cadence. And you usually know like exactly what you're going to get there as you play the game more and sort of when they're going to be adding more stuff and all that to it. So, but yeah, always good to incentivize devs to make sure they have their planned releases locked down. Which may be more of an indie thing. Or early access thing, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if you got anything to add, Brandon.
No, not really. Honestly, it's just something they should have done a while ago.
Yeah. You know what they also should do? They should deal with their Nazi problem, but...
Yeah, seriously.
Gabe's fine with that.
Yeah.
I even looked, and there's obviously a bunch of Nazi games on there.
Yeah.
There's one There's one that was it was an anime Nazi game.
Mm-hmm.
They had a scantily clad girl who had, I think, the eagle tattoo on her mm-hmm. chest between her boobs.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, I guess that's all you need to do to make sure everybody knows it's a Nazi game, besides it being in the title.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you get your anime girl, and then there's the 2 or 3% of her body that has the Nazi symbol on it. So great.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. But yeah, what else do we have here? Oh yeah, this has been a big thing that has been going around. It's definitely been framed in one way that Sony's looking to buy the owners of From Software, which is technically true, but like as we talked about last weekend, I don't think the gaming companies under Kadokawa's ownership is that's not the focus.
It's
mainly on expanding their media ownership to the anime and graphic novel companies, manga companies, and all that kind of stuff that they own.
Yeah,
they are kind of a big conglomerate in Japan that just kind of has their fingers in a lot of different pies. In a way that you know, anybody outside of Japan probably does not realize. The aspects of the company you may know about, obviously, is like From Software being owned by them. But they also own Spike Chunsoft and a couple of other developers there, Acquire, who made the most recent Mario and Luigi game.
Yep.
So, yeah, that kind of gives them a potential extra bit of money from Nintendo projects they've worked on.
Yep.
As well as the other companies, because they also worked on Octopath Traveler.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of stuff there. And they also worked on Dragon Ball Sparking Zero. So,
yeah.
A lot of talk about this, especially on the gaming side, where about the potential exclusivity stuff here. And it's like, I don't know if this would be a thing that, because it's not PlayStation that's acquiring them, it's Sony Corporate.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't be surprised that they would acquire this to kind of leave the company as is.
Yeah.
And kind of let them operate as an independent entity to PlayStation and kind of let them keep doing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's the way that I kind of see it. People are trying to like get to the Activision Blizzard acquisition, which I don't see.
No, that's not really even the thing. You have to understand about big Japanese conglomerates is that it's not unusual for a like big conglomerate to own like two competing companies at the same time and have them both compete against each other so that they'll, you know, both be able to get the sweet profits. There's a company in Japan that owns both Shueisha and Shogakukan. And if you don't know who those are, Shueisha, they're the ones who publish Shonen Jump. Shogakukan, they publish Shonen Sunday, and they also have the Doraemon license. But they are actually owned by a company called, let's see, if I can find, because they're, it was, funnily enough, Shueisha actually started out as a part of Shogakukan, like, way back in, like, 1925, and then they broke away sometime in the 1950s. And now, once again, both of them are being owned by the same company. So, it's really not unusual for that to happen in the Japanese economy. So, no, it's not going to be like the Activision Blizzard thing.
Especially because they're not as big of a company as that. At least money-wise. Like the numbers I saw is they made like $1.7 billion last year. Mm-hmm. So to acquire them probably wouldn't be too much more than $10 billion at the worst. Five or six at the most. Probably around there, but seems like that would be a decent purchase for them to kind of diversify a bit of what their portfolio is, especially in Japan. Because they own Crunchyroll and Funimation, which Funimation is a localization company.
Yep.
And Crunchyroll is a streaming service.
Mm-hmm.
Funimation had their own as well, but it wasn't very good.
Yeah.
Especially when they would try to be like, oh, we give you a code, but only to our streaming service. And it's like, who the fuck wants this?
Yeah, seriously.
Not even to one of the ones that people would be okay with out there. But mm-hmm. it's like, so yeah, when they kind of rolled up all the Crunchyroll and Funimation streaming service stuff to Crunchyroll, like that stuff got lost. And I'm like, yeah, that sucks. But also, that seemed like a bunch of dumb bullshit on their end.
Mm-hmm.
They shouldn't have done. Like, at worst, they should have given people codes to buy that stuff off of, you know, Amazon or Google or Apple or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense, but yeah, they will get some actual anime companies here. Though Sony did own Aniplex,
yeah,
which did make anime. But yeah, this would broaden their portfolio there, as well as get them a lot of manga companies here that would be an added benefit for them.
Oh,
especially in like light novel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it seems like a varied company that offers a lot of good things. And yeah, as far as we know, Kadokawa has said that they have received an initial letter of intent to acquire the company's shares, but have no further things to say about what they're going to do. They're
Mm-mm.
seems like they're going to be looking it over and talking to them and seeing like what the terms are and see if that's, you know, agreeable or not, whatever.
Mm.
So it seems like if that ends up happening, it could be by the end of the year, maybe yeah. early next year. We'll see, but I don't think this is going to have the same kind of fervor about it, but that the Activision Blizzard acquisition did, where mm-hmm. there was a lot of monopoly talk, getting a lot of interference with the FTC and other groups that the other countries mm-hmm. have to make sure everything's on the up and up there, and they're not looking to shut out competitors and what so far has gone about what they've said. Maybe not the layoff stuff, but yeah, there you go. I don't know if you have anything to add on that one.
Nope. That's pretty much all of it.
Yeah, so obviously this means Bloodborne 2 is happening. They're canceling Elden Ring 2, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, people are already like fantasy booking stuff of like, oh, they're obviously going to put From Software on the Decima engine, and it's like, buddy, that's not gonna happen.
Yeah,
maybe they could work on the engine that was used for the Demon's Souls remake. That might be usable for them once they learn it, how to use it, the Blue Point engine.
Yeah, seriously.
I don't know, but also they'll probably just keep doing what they're doing.
Mm.
So yeah, that's it. Yeah, we'll see where that goes.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, speaking of the end of the year, the Game Awards are happening December 12th, and they announced the nominees on Monday here, which led to a lot of interesting choices. And I'll say up front, I feel like they kind of messed up a lot in the general formatting of all this. Because if you go to the site, we just have a general list here, but if you go to the official website and look at the nominees, like, you'll see the games, but they never mention the platforms they're on.
Mm-hmm.
And when they go to certain categories like best performance, they don't tell you what character they played in the game.
Yeah.
Which I know which ones these characters played because I've seen these games and that, but there's like the innovation and accessibility category, and they don't list like why these are here. There's one that's from last year, and it's like, I don't
mm-hmm.
what exactly was this one? It's like, who knows? But yeah, it's got some pretty decent stuff because, yeah, the thing that's always going to make the Game Awards kind of be a weird thing to do a list for is that they have such a large group of people voting for this stuff that
yeah
they're kind of genericize the choices here, because people are generally going to gravitate to the stuff that probably did the best sales wise and whatnot.
Yeah,
that's more like what people have played. So,
mm-hmm.
We'll kind of work our way up here. I think I'll start near the bottom. We'll skip all the esports stuff. Because mm-hmm. that's not interesting, and content creator of the year, we'll skip that as well.
Yeah,
yeah, they have a most anticipated game. Mm-hmm. Five games here: Death Stranding 2, On the Beach, Ghost of Yotei,
yeah,
Grand Theft Auto 6, Metroid Prime 4 Beyond, and Monster Hunter Wilds.
Yeah,
those are all pretty solid choices.
Those are all pretty solid choices, but let's be honest, it's going to be GTA 6.
Yeah, that's going to be the one where they say like, oh yeah, this game is coming out.
Yeah, maybe. Hopefully.
But people have been excited about it. And that's, I think, the one that's fan voted. So that'll be interesting to see. But let's see. Best adaptation. Let's see. Arcane, All Out, Knuckles, Like a Dragon Yakuza, and Tomb Raider, The Legend of Lara Croft. Which I imagine that goes to Fallout.
Mm-hmm.
That's been the most acclaimed of these.
Yeah.
So there's that. Best multiplayer: Call of Duty Black Ops 6, Helldivers 2, Super Mario Party Jamboree, Tekken 8, and Warhammer 40,000 Space Marine 2.
Yep.
I feel like this could go to Call of Duty 6, but I would like to see Helldivers 2 win that. That would be fun to see.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, that's. It seems like it's probably going to be Call of Duty 6 because it's as good as that series has had in a while. And that's probably one that most of the people voting have played. Let's see. Best sports / racing. With technically no racing games here. I think there's one F1 24, but you can count that as a sports game because it's covering a specific sport. See, EA Sports FC 25. NBA 2K25, Top Spin 2K25, and WWE 2K24. So two companies there covering all of these.
Oh, yeah.
I imagine it either goes to FC25 or NBA
2K25.
Yeah, no football here because I'm going to take a wild guess that there's a lot of foreign voters here. That's more for FC25. And American football is not on their radar.
Yeah.
And probably a lot of the people that voted for this in America are not football fans.
Nope.
So this is probably a category that's like the most boring one of all for them. But
yeah.
So I mentioned it's probably either FC25 or NBA
2K25.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Best simulation / strategy, which is always a fun category because it includes a wide range of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Here. Age of Mythology Retold, Frostpunk 2, Yatsugami Path of the Goddess, Manor Lords, and Unicorn Overlord.
Yep.
There's a wide range of stuff here.
This
one, I could probably see the Frostpunk 2. Maybe Unicorn Overlord.
Yeah.
Some buzz, but I don't know what the general attention to that has been. I don't think it's done super well, but yeah, it's one that could easily have fallen to the wayside for people.
I loved it, but yeah, it is kind of niche.
Yeah. So yeah, there's that. Best family. This is the weirdest category. It's oftentimes just like, what did Nintendo put out this year? Put that on here.
Yep.
But yeah, there's Astrobot, which is a solid choice. The Legend of Zelda Echoes of Wisdom, which is interesting. The Plucky Squire, which is surprising for that. Princess Peach Showtime, which seems like a decent choice. And then Super Mario Party Jamboree, which I don't know why that made there. That seems definitely like, what did Nintendo put out? Oh, they put out a Mario Party. Not realizing this is the category. It says the description for the best game appropriate for family play, irrespective of genre or platform. And Super Mario Party is for deviants.
Yeah.
people that want to hate each other.
Yeah. People who want to break up relationships and destroy families.
Yeah, people who do not understand the concept of being a good winner.
Yeah.
That are sore losers or assholes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not a great choice there, but I can see Zelda or Astrobot winning this.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Astrobot, especially. Because, yeah. That game is legitimately amazing. Yeah. It's my game of the year. I'm not even going to lie. It's my game of the year, Astrobot is.
Yeah. Let's see. Best fighting? You can tell this is a light category.
Yeah.
Dragon Ball Sparking Zero.
Mm-hmm.
Grand Blue Fantasy Versus Rising, which I think came out technically last December.
Yeah.
Like after last year's show. So that's the rare opportunity that a game from the previous year gets onto the list.
Mm-hmm.
Huge assign Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection Arcade Classics.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't have enough, so we put this collection of old fighting games on here.
Yeah.
Multiverses, which I feel like is a game that had buzz for a bit and then just disappeared again, as it's not doing super well. And then Tekken 8, which I imagine will win this. It'll be probably either that or Dragon Ball.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's that. Best RPG. There's Dragon's Dogma 2.
Yep.
Which is a popular one.
Yeah, popular.
Elden Ring, Shadow of the Erdtree, as we start seeing that pop up into things.
Yep.
Because they made clear up front that people could vote for DLC and such. Games that were playable in that year, essentially, were eligible. Jeff Keighley and his crew aren't, like, super picky about that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, Like a Dragon, Infinite Wealth, and Metaphor Fantasio.
Probably the most
contentious category here so far.
Yeah.
I could see Metaphor winning that. I could see
Final Fantasy
VII Rebirth.
Oh, I'd
also not be surprised that Elden Ring wins that.
Mm-hmm.
There's that. Best Action Adventure, as they struggle to define what action and action adventure are.
Yeah.
For this Astrobot, The Legend of Zelda Echoes of Wisdom, Prince of Persia the Lost Crown, Silent Hill 2, and Star Wars Outlaws.
Yeah.
Which is, like, I'm going to guess it's Astrobot or Legend of Zelda.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Prince of Persia is the underdog here that could win.
Mm-hmm.
Action game, Black Myth Wukong, Call of Duty Black Ops 6, Helldivers 2.
Yeah.
Stellar Blade, Warhammer 40,000 Space Marine 2.
Yeah, that last one's going to be a bit, is going to, that last one was sort of a sleeper hit, so.
Yeah. That did well, but yeah, this one, I could see Call of Duty winning it. Maybe Helldivers, or maybe even Black Myth. Wukong is kind of the underdog here.
Mm-hmm.
That could end up winning it. Let's see, best VR, AR game, Arizona Sunshine Remake, Asgard's Wrath 2, Batman Arkham Shadow, Metal Hellsinger VR, and Metro Awakening.
Mm-hmm.
I'd imagine Batman wins that, from what I've heard of these games.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like the one that probably wins that. Let's see, best mobile game, AFK Journey, Balatro, Pokemon Trading Card Game Pocket, Withering Waves, Zenless Zone Zero. So three of those games are basically Genshin Impact, and the other two are card games of wildly different degrees. So I could see, I don't really care about this category, but Pokemon probably could win that based off of the popular that's been. But yeah, then best debut indie, Animal Well, Balatro, Manor Lords, Pacific Drive, and the Plucky Squire.
Yeah.
I assume Balatro wins that.
Yeah, Balatro is going to, I have a feeling Balatro is going to sweep a couple of these.
Yeah. Let's see, best independent game, Animal Well, Balatro, Lorelei and the Laser Eyes, Neva, and UFO 50. I can see Balatro also winning that one. I think the game I'd really like to win it is UFO 50, because I think that's an amazing project there that not many teams ever try to do. So there's that. Let's see, best community support. which says, recognizing a game for outstanding community support, transparency, and responsiveness, inclusive of social media activity and game updates slash patch weird category. Baldur's Gate 3, Final Fantasy 14, Fortnite, Helldivers 2, and No Man's Sky. I would say No Man's Sky should win that, but I imagine maybe Baldur's Gate 3 or Final Fantasy 14 gets it. And yeah, kind of clouding like what's differences between these two categories is best ongoing game. Awarded to a game for outstanding development of ongoing content that evolves the player experience over time. There's Destiny 2, The Final Shape, Diablo 4, Final Fantasy 14, Fortnite, and Helldivers 2. And it's like, I could see that being kind of any of these.
Yeah. Yeah.
Destiny 2 had a great expansion that I don't know much else outside of that, how that got people excited for, because they had the layoffs and all that, kind of reassess how they were going to do things from there. That kind of created a weird situation. Diablo 4 had a big expansion that came out with some big updates too that puts them in an interesting place. Final Fantasy 14 had a big expansion that I want to say has been kind of like just another one of those, for as hyped as people were for it. Fortnite's had some big stuff going on as they do a bunch of new things with like Fortnite OG mode that they're doing now with the original map that people can play. And Helldivers 2, it's kind of struggled a bit with its updates, having a little bit of a player discontent, but working to right that ship again, which they seem to be doing. They got a lot of attention for a while as they were adding stuff to it, so I don't know, but yeah, I could see that probably being Diablo 4, Fortnite. Games for impact, as I say here, for a thought-provoking game with a pro-social meaning or message. So Closer the Distance, Indica, Neva, Life is Strange, Double Exposure, Senua Saga, Hellblade 2, Tales of Kinzera Zao. I would probably go with Tales of Kinzera Zao. Could maybe go to Life is Strange, or maybe Indica for that, but I feel like that's always a weird category because it's like the most indie category of like what game had the best messaging, that kind of stuff. Innovation and accessibility, Call of Duty Black Ops 6, Diablo 4, Dragon Age the Veilguard, Prince of Persia the Lost Crown, Star Wars Outlaws. To which this kind of felt like a category that they don't explain like what particular things are here, what their highlight is, whether it's the amount of stuff they've done or particular highlights. Like Diablo 4 added some better settings for blindness, people with vision issues and that kind of stuff. So I think that's why that's there. So yeah, I don't know. This could be Dragon Age or maybe Diablo 4. I don't know. For your games I was thinking of that particularly striking for this year. But yeah. Best performance. This is for, you know, voice actors, motion performance capture stuff. They don't tell you which characters these are. I know them. Brianna White in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. She's Aerith. Hannah Tell in Life is Strange Double Exposure. She's Max. Humberly Gonzalez from Star Wars Outlaws. She's the main character. I'm blanking on her name. I forget what her name is. She's the main character. Luke Roberts in Silent Hill 2. He's playing the main character in Silent Hill 2. I forget who his name is. Helena Jurgens in Senua's Saga's Hellblade 2. She plays Senua, so all good choices. I'd say this maybe goes to Aerith for this. Could be the Silent Hill 2 guy. That one's also been well regarded for that, but we'll see. Best audio design, Astrobot, Call of Duty Black Ops 6, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, Senua's Saga Hellblade 2, and Silent Hill 2. Yeah, this is like a category where I'm like, I'm not 100% sure why some of these games are here. Call of Duty Black Ops 6, I'm not 100% sure. Mm-hmm. I know they've done work with like 3D audio stuff that you could potentially pay extra money for it.
Yeah.
But beyond that, I've seen people being like, why is this here? Doesn't necessarily stand out. Yeah, it's weird. It's a weird category. Like Astrobot could be it, but I think it's largely just music kind of stuff. They don't do a ton of amazing audio design stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This could maybe go to Senua's Saga's Hellblade 2, just for the way that that is all designed.
Yeah.
See, best score in music. Astrobot, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, Metaphor ReFantazio, Silent Hill 2, Stellar Blade.
Yeah.
That one could be Astrobot, could be Metaphor, maybe even Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I'd maybe go for Metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
Then maybe I would pick Astrobot. Yeah. I think it has some really good music in there.
Oh, yeah. It's got an amazing soundtrack. Which I'm hoping to hear at some point during the show, because
They do a medley of all the game things, so they'll do that before they announce that.
Let's see.
Best art direction: Astrobot, Black Myth Wukong, Elden Ring, Shadow of the Erdtree, Metaphor ReFantazio, and Neva. And this is another interesting category where it's like, I maybe wouldn't put Elden Ring in here because that's, you know, as good as it is, it's also more of the same for the great artwork that was in Elden Ring. Like, they just did more cool stuff.
Yeah.
Versus putting in other games. Like, I'm going to look at the indie stuff here and see, like, things that could be fitting in there. Like, I could even put a Balatro in there just for all their artwork, but Animal Wild could work in there. A bunch of other stuff, but yeah, there's that, I would maybe say, I don't know, Neva? Astrobot could be cool, but also that's been an art style they've done a handful of times now in these games.
Yeah.
Very cool art style for what they're doing,
but
not necessarily one that stands out uniquely for that game versus their other ones.
Yeah.
Maybe do Metaphor, but then also's reminiscent from their Persona stuff that they've evolved to be a little more Hieronymus Bosch type of art, but
yeah,
still got a lot of archetypes that you expect. Best narrative: Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, Like a Dragon: Infinite Wealth, Metaphor: ReFantazio, Senua's Saga: Hellblade 2, Silent Hill 2.
Yeah,
it's like Final Fantasy VII Rebirth has a lot of narrative in it. I don't know that it seen much about it being the greatest story or anything. Like Metaphor ReFantazio could take this easily.
Oh yeah,
I feel like they're probably indie games that could have made this, but you know, the nature of the group they have voting for this is going to lead to this kind of list. Then you get the big issue is that best game direction and game of the year are the exact same list. Because I'm assuming they must not explain game direction too well. And it's also probably something that's hard to make a distinction about compared to everything else. I feel like there should be more unique games here. Because like UFO 50 should be in here. Because that is an incredible work of direction to get all of these games together that feel like they're from the same universe that these games were made in, pulling elements from each other that feel like they could be evolutions of, you know, past games in that collection, that kind of stuff. In a way that is a sign of great direction and all that versus the list that's here. It's the same as Game of the Year, so it's Astrobot, Balatro, Black Myth Wukong, Elden Ring, Shadow of the Erdtree, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and Metaphor: ReFantazio.
Yeah.
So it's like whatever wins game direction probably wins Game of the Year, I'm assuming, because there's no distinction between these. There's no difference between the two lists.
Yeah.
So that's kind of just the weirdness of this whole category, these two categories. But I don't know. I could see Final Fantasy VII Rebirth winning this in a weird way. But I think, like, what should win, probably between Astrobot, Metaphori Fantasio, maybe even Bellatro. For games that people talked about a lot.
Yeah.
For those versus like Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which is very much a lot of high praise and a lot of people being like, man, this game is way too fucking long and full of a lot of fluff. For what it needs versus, you know, what it is, which is the second of three games. The first game remake was a fairly tight game. It had its side content, but it did not ask you to screw around so much with the way it was built.
Yeah.
And like Metaphor, people have been raving about that. That would very much be the recency bias on this list. Astrobot being close to that. It would be wild if Elden Ring Shadow of the Erdtree wins. Considering the first game, the base game won a couple years ago. That would be like the wildest thing that would piss people off. And maybe Blackmouth Wukong also being that. Game that a lot of people enjoyed, but also a lot of people were like, yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
But not blowing me out of the water kind of thing. And so that seems like that it's either the underdog that everybody underestimates its chances to win, or or it gets nothing out of this entire show. Should be fine, but yeah. Some solid choices, but it's very much like the ones you would probably expect from what people have been talking about a lot this year. But yeah, that's gonna be it for the show this week. We're looking forward to this show, the Game Awards. Intrigued to see like what wins these categories. Ultimately, I don't really care. It's not like we don't vote on these. We don't have any say in anything. So ultimately, it's funny how much people get angry about them.
Yeah, seriously.
Like, there's tons of other awards shows out there. And
yeah,
people that do their own lists, and I was like, just pay attention to those.
Yeah.
You want the one that honors the industry so much? There's the GDC Awards and the DICE Awards. Those are the ones by developers and all that, which has its own issues because you're expecting developers to play every game.
Yeah.
And know them all, which is not easy. It's not like it's not like the Oscars or whatever, where you just get a bunch of discs and you just put a couple in every week and you get caught up mostly on the big ones. But yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see. That's it's what, 3 weeks away?
Yeah.
Two and a half weeks. That'll be on Thursday, December 12th. I think we'll be co-streaming it, so that'll be fun. But yeah, we're also working on our own Game of the Year stuff as we try to get as much time into the games we think are gonna be making our lists and making sure we get our top tens done. So we still got another month for that, so we got time. But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. We'll be doing another show next week, though that'll be December by then. That's when things really start getting busy. Let me see here. I'm trying to see if we got anything of note coming out this week. Okay, we got a couple things. There is, let's see, Neon Blood. That's the, I think that's the computer role-playing style game. Yeah, I think that's, that looks neat. Nine Souls is out on consoles. Been out on PC for most of the year, but now on the 26th, it'll be out for all the consoles, PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch. Let's see, on the 28th, is there anything here? Riviera of the Promised Land remaster is out on Switch. But not really much here, unless you care about Snow Bros. There's a new thing of that. That might be a port of one of the games or multiple games. I don't know. Not much. Unless you care about the release of Rent-A-Girlfriend in Japan.
Yeah.
They like those games. And not many people are releasing stuff this week, though. Which isn't too much of a surprise. Next week, they got Lollipop Chainsaw repopped for PS4 and Xbox One. Decided to put those on the old consoles, so there you go. But yeah, I think we'll end this show. Thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, feel free to let friends and family know. They should check it out and select strangers who are also excited for food this week for those in the U.S. Food and some time off and hopefully some responsible spending of money on sales and such. There are definitely some interesting things on sale, but yeah, not really a ton of amazing deals. But
yeah, and hopefully being able to get through Thanksgiving without one argument.
Yeah. Well, you should just focus on eating your food, finishing that, and moving on.
Pick your battles, people. Pick your battles.
But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. I hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.